You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I'm talking about straining for that logo on the side of your helmet and not the name on your back.
Yes, sir.
Because we know what it represents. It represents everybody here you see and everybody you can't that we've talked about. I'm here to strain with you, man. I swear to God, I'm here to strain with you. Let's go. Everything you got, strain with everything you got.
Let's go.
Bills on three. 1, 2, 3.
Bills.
You're listening to the Off Tackle with John Fetis Show with your host, Joe Miller.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome into the Off Tackle with John Fetis Show. My name is Joe Miller. I'm the host of the show, and I'm here with the man of the hour, the man of every hour at 9 o'clock on Monday nights, John Fina himself, former Buffalo Bill for 10 years, 11-year pro in the NFL. How are you, John?
I'm feeling good, right? What do we say? Victory Monday?
Victory nice. Monday, which is followed by Victory Tuesday and Victory yep. Wednesday.
Well, I mean, you got beautiful weather in Western New York. You got a victory. I think you milk everything out of it that you can, right, until the next contest.
That's right. So we are here on the Buffalo Rumblings multicast network, and this will be dropped as a pod on Tuesday morning. We're so excited to have everybody with us as the Buffalo Bills have defeated the Washington football team 43-21. 43 is a weird number. I said that on my show last night, that 43 is a weird number. Somebody did some back research. 64 times in 100 years of NFL history have teams scored 43 points to finish a game.
There's a stat for everything.
There is absolutely a stat for everything.
I guess one non-two-point play or extra point, and you're there. You just got to score enough field goals and touchdowns. So you said we demoralized the Washington Football Club. I mean, just absolutely, it was demoralizing. And as a fan, and you're watching the game, how cool is it? What like when you see, you asked me yesterday, like what's going through Chase Young's mind right now? And he's like, part of it is like, geez, we're still freaking 14 games from me packing my truck and driving home.
That was the middle of the third quarter after the first drop one of several drops in that second half by a wide receiver, and they just shot to Chase Young. And I asked you, I was like, as a former NFL player, the offense is playing great, but the defense just doesn't have it. Like, and you're getting thrushed.
Throttled?
Throttled is the word I was looking for. Thank you. Like, what is going through your mind at that point? And that was what you were just talking about. What were you about to say?
Well, I was just saying, as a fan, you look at it and there's a little bit of Schadenfreude, right? You feel good when somebody else is feeling bad, the celebration of someone else's demise. But, I was listening to some of the radio this morning and people just keep referring back to, I don't care what the Texans are going through. We did it for freaking 18 years here in Buffalo. So
that's right.
We're finally enjoying the fruits of great management and wonderful culture and great play. So,
to wrap up,
what do you think was going through Chase Young's mind right now?
I would tell you this. So as I was on Twitter today and watching just different replays, I saw a replay of Josh Allen's touchdown run where he drops back, looks to his left. He's going through his progressions. Nothing's there. Chase Young kind of breaks free. So it flushes Josh out to his right. Josh takes his two or three, four quick step, break away from you. Chase Young gave up, literally just gave up. Like he surrendered his pass rush completely, which then if you remember on that play, Josh Allen kind of jukes the guy that was coming at him. And then just Chase could have got him from behind easy, but Chase totally just gave up. He's like, it ain't worth it.
Yeah, you know, and I think part of what Chase Young's brain must have been trying to process is, you know, we rushed four most of the game because we felt with our front four, like we should be able to get there. Like we expect to be there. We watched the Pittsburgh film.
Right.
We watched the Miami film. You know, this offensive line has got its issues. Like, why can't the four of us? I mean, look at us.
Right.
You know, four first round draft choices. And there's a frustration there. Like, geez, I feel like I'm close. I feel like I'm getting there. And then the cheese is just taken away. Right. You're just not there.
Right. Exactly. And it was a rough day for them. So just as we break, we've already kind of broken into it, but breaking a little more, what were your just overall thoughts versus maybe your expectations for that football game? Because going into it, you know, when I looked at the schedule, I was like, that could be a tough game, right? Because of their defense. That could
be. Yeah, I mean, when we talked about it last time, I think everybody would agree. And I think the bulk of the media really just said this game was about how does our offensive line handle their front four, which is an impressive group. And that was pretty much the game plan offensively, is we have to neutralize these guys with the run, with the play action. That was my expectation. I talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
So those of you listening are like, God, he's like a broken record. Yes, I am. It's also my parenting style. You know, so they did everything they needed to do. And I went back and I looked at the numbers for the running backs. And while they don't pop off the screen, mm-hmm. when we were successful with the run, it was at the right time. And it set up play action. And we ran a ton of play action.
Yeah, ton of
it. Defensively, you know, it was very clear after the amount of pressure we brought in the first really two games. I don't know how many defensive plays I've encountered them where we brought more than four guys, but it couldn't have been more than three or four. And the plan was, let's make Heinicke beat us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he wasn't able to do that. He's elusive, so we didn't get any sacks. But I think it was, you know, the biggest thing was when we were rubbing chicken wing grease on the football and their receivers just couldn't, you know, maybe they're ranch guys and not blue cheese. They couldn't handle it.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you had made a comment during the game that the defensive backs for the Bills are just playing with such incredible confidence right now. And they are. And and you saw that even in Levi Wallace in the Dolphins game when he was breaking on footballs, which is, I would say it, uncharacteristic of kind of the way that he plays. Tre'Davious White plays that way. He'll leave his man and break on a ball. Like, you'll see him do that a lot, especially from film study. If he sees something he recognizes, watches his guy, watches the guy underneath, is like, oh, I know what's about to happen, and he'll break off this guy. But these guys are just playing with confidence, which allows them to just send those four, right? Which is cool. And the defense, to me, Matt Milano is playing like a man on fire. I just cannot believe how well he's playing. And I don't know if you've got some thoughts to that as far as what's sparking him. Is it something where he's clean? We hear that a lot as football fans. You know, if the linebackers can stay clean. And I think Edmonds didn't stay as clean yesterday. He had a little bit of trouble getting off some blocks. But Milano was clean most of the day. I mean, I don't know if you got thoughts on Milano's game.
Well, I didn't focus on him as much as I did on the front four because that you know, my comment will be on that. But I have to say that I think this is a really great fit for a guy like Milano, you know, creative guy with incredible football instincts, mm-hmm. who's got people behind him who he doesn't have to worry about. You know, do I need to create more depth? Am I worried about whose coverage is going to break down? Or do I feel this pressure that I have to backstop the inside two or the outside end?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel as if there's so much confidence exuded from behind him as well as in front of him that he gets to just play his game. And guys develop, you know, and I think they're using him to the best of his abilities and putting him in positions game plan wise and defensive play calling wise where you know, he's really showing his stuff. It's really impressive.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, I was focusing on the defensive front. And I think this is kind of like a good thing in a weird way. Like, we didn't have any sacks, right? We didn't have even a ton of hits on Heinicke. And, wow, that kid's really – he's got some escapability.
Yep.
I mean, you'd agree. He looked pretty good when he got outside the pocket.
Yep.
If you look, and I was focusing on this quite a bit, the tenacity with which the front four came against what I think is a good offensive line was impressive. There, you know, I didn't see many plays taken off.
Mm-hmm.
They were fighting and battling. And, you know, we were always a step away. There were opportunities to grab Heinicke when he was trying to escape the pocket. We didn't get him. But in their mind, you know, now they're just dripping with saliva. you know, the rabidity doesn't dissipate because they came up with a zero. I think it increases with this group. And we, you know, remember, we had that conversation some time ago just about what that room must be like,
right?
The competitive nature of it. The fact that everybody virtually gets to play fresh. I think no defensive lineman plays more than 66% of the plays.
Yeah, and some of them are in the 40s, 49, 48. And I talked about that yesterday in the overreaction show, just that there's guys, quality NFL players that can't get on the field. They're inactive on Sundays when you're talking about F.A. Obada, Harrison Phillips. So we talked about
that. And, you know, Boogie Basham.
And Boogie, right, who's a rookie, right, which it's probably not necessarily a bad thing that he's going to sit his rookie year and kind of learn a little bit from these guys. Are you concerned about a little bit of the I was gonna ask a different question. I've noticed a little bit of an absence from Jerry Hughes. Jerry Hughes is, as much as Jerry Hughes has traditionally been that pusher guy, the pressure guy, the guy that's the guy with his hair is on fire, playing like his hair is on fire. Jerry's been kind of quiet this year. I haven't seen a lot. I haven't heard his name a lot. I don't remember him standing out to me yesterday. I'm not saying it's bad. You were with me.
I understand what you're saying.
We didn't talk about it. So I don't think you were watching for him either, but it
was and don't anybody take this the wrong way, but sometimes you're a cog in the wheel and you're performing your job. It's just not flashy and beautiful and fun to look at. You know, it's nice when Jerry Hughes gets, you know, a sack and a half per game, but his contributions and, you know, I didn't have the opportunity to go back and watch it. You know, it's like, I think Sal Capaccio said this. You know, even if you're at practice, you can't see everybody. You can't see everything. And if we were going to break down every position, you know, you'd have to watch the game like two or three times at a minimum.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, in the entirety of it, the fact that he played 66 plays and may not have, you know, produced statistically doesn't mean that he wasn't incredibly integral in the success of the defense, which aside from, what would you say, like a bad field position, like we got to work on our hands team, you know what I mean? And then just a fluke 76-73 yard play.
Yes, somewhere on there.
That was painful. Did you feel like when we were watching that play was never going to end?
It seemed like it was in slow motion. Yes, for sure. And it definitely wasn't a situation like we saw with the kick return. And we saw the replay for the Jaguars where the 109 yard one, and it looked like, I forget who they were playing. It escapes me. Didn't want to tackle him. Oh, the Cardinals. It looked like the Cardinals players like were disinterested. Like the Bills were, it seemed like they were over pursuing a little bit. They wanted to get to him, but yeah, that play definitely happened in slow motion. As far as expectations for me for this game defensively, I expected the Bills to do well. I mean, I was a little bit concerned about McLaurin. I was a little bit concerned about Gibson. I wasn't concerned about Heinicke at all. To me, he's a serviceable player, game manager. He's better than the guy we're going to see this week. Davis Stills, right? Is that his name? Is not going to be in his caliber. Is it Mills or Stills? Davis, whatever, the quarterback for the Texans. But I was surprised at the fact that they didn't get home, which then led me to, in my own thoughts and the conversation I think we may have even had, was that the game plan? Was the game plan to kind of keep him corralled and not allow him to escape? Almost what we saw teams do against us with Tyrod Taylor. They would try to keep Tyrod in the pocket. They didn't want him to break free and to allow, hey, look, if you're going to beat us, you're either going to beat us on the ground, which they couldn't do other than that. Well, that was a pass play. To Gibson. But it's a glorified run. It was a screen, but it's a pass play. But you're either going to beat us on the ground or you're going to beat us in the pocket. And clearly he was unable to do so. We saw him hold the ball. We saw him make some poor decisions from the pocket. Where are you on that idea, that concept that they weren't trying to necessarily harass the heck out of him? They were just trying to be around him.
Well, and that's the case. I mean, just by virtue of the fact that they brought four almost all the time, I think your insights are good. They basically said, we're going to make three guys beat us. One's the quarterback, and he has to get it to the other guy, who's McLaurin,
yeah.
And then in the running back. And, you know, even despite the results of the Pittsburgh game, and I want to put that behind me. You know, we keep talking about it because it's still a little bit fresh, you know, but we need to forget that game. We need to just put it in the bank. There were a couple of anomalies that happened in the game, just like the 60 yard onside kick that McKenzie experienced, which no fault of his own. I think
really?
he would have thought I should have attacked that a little bit harder.
Okay. No,
the wind knocked it down.
Gotcha.
And, you know, coming from a guy who's tried to field a punt a few times, highest admiration, for returners. It is awful.
So I've seen no post game stuff about that play. So I haven't seen any questions for the Washington football team yesterday, just as far as if that was intentional, was it a play that they had, or if it was just the wind, he kicked it up and the wind just dropped it down. I thought it was intentional. And for me, you heard me on the couch yelling, "That's a free ball. That's a free," like before it hit the ground, I'm yelling, "That's a free ball."
I was talking to Daryl last night, Daryl Talley, and he said, "Man, that thing went up and all of a sudden it just fell out of the sky."
Gotcha. So maybe in the wind.
And then I was having dinner with some other friends and they said the same thing. They said, well, our expectation was that ball was going to go at least to the, five yard line.
Right.
And it just hung up. I blame all my golf shots on the wind, when I don't hit the green. Oh, the wind up there must be terrible.
The wind blowing that sidewind is killing
me. You don't know it because the trees are only 30 feet high, but man, I hit the ball like 800 feet in the air and there's a lot of wind up there.
The swirling wind.
Yeah. And I guess, when you consider a lot of people say, "Oh, well, luck counts." I say, "Yeah, good luck and bad luck counts." Never know when it comes. But when we talk about reactions to the game, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, starting fast. We got that first touchdown. Remember? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What I say to you?
I don't remember.
I'm glad I'm having an impact on your life. I said, "What's the percentage of teams that win when they score?"
That's what it was. Yep, right? I think I said it. I think it's in the 80s is what I remember somebody saying.
Yeah, I would have guessed it was in the middle high 70s. But when you score and you score convincingly like that, it just bodes well for our team, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think our team runs on a degree of confidence and excitement and camaraderie. And it tends to grow and continue to flourish when you start fast. And every coach, the goal is to score on your first drive.
Yeah.
Right. But when you score convincingly and beautifully on your first drive, and especially playing at home, I think it mattered. What's your take? I thought that to me was the biggest key to putting these guys away early.
Yeah, for me it was very much that first. I mean, I stood up from the couch on that first third and long, and I said out loud, "The Bills have this play. Josh has got this play." And he threw that bullet to Davis for 23 yards for that first down. And for me, that was when I knew that today was going to be different. I was like, "Oh, it's going to be different today." There was just a command in that throw for Josh, and he drilled. I think he drilled Davis right between the numbers. And it very much looked like us getting back that confidence that we had as fans that third and whatever, Josh has this play. He's going to make whatever play he needs to. Scoring early in the fashion that they did, you watched that breakdown. Did you watch that breakdown I sent you? The he's not a comedian, but the dude that does the parody breakdowns.
Man, I never got to it, but I'm
going to. You need to watch it because it's freaking hysterical. It's about that play. I can't play it here because this is a family show. And
it's a family show.
There's some F-bombs in it and stuff like that, but it's absolutely hilarious. But no, it was obvious to me, which we can talk about the expectations and what our thoughts about the offense. I didn't know what to expect from the offense based on what we saw, right, from the Steelers game, from the Miami game. They talked about in the post-game presser yesterday a lot, just as far as the players did. Beasley and was talking about it, just like you win by 35 points and you're kind of unsettled, leaves a bad taste in your mouth, which five touchdowns. You won by five touchdowns, 35-0, and you're unsettled. So I was a little concerned on what we were going to see. Obviously, that defensive line on the Washington Redskins is stellar. All first round draft picks. We know, and I kept saying that it was Jonathan Allen yesterday, and it wasn't. Cody Ford was having challenges with Darren Payne. So 94 was Darren Payne. Jonathan Allen was on the other side of him, but they blew away my expectations. I would have been happy if we got out of that game 21-17. You know what I mean? Like three touchdowns, maybe two in the air, one on the ground, or even if it's a fluky touchdown. And the Bills just came out hot. They just throttled them.
Yeah, they did. And, a couple of things that obviously, Emmanuel Sanders had a brilliant game, Cole Beasley. And I just enjoyed kind of sitting back and being able to watch Cole Beasley's routes. When I was looking at it, there's something that they always say, you find an open space. But it's what he does when he comes out of his break and he's, his eyes are up and he sees where the defenders are. And he literally will just slow down to the point where he only gains two or three more yards. But if he takes two more steps, he puts the next DB into play. It's really beautiful the way he does it. Going back, I guess we could transition now to
what went well.
What well we did the what went well, I think, by and large. I mean, you probably have a couple more.
I do.
Lynn, let's hear it. Tell me, what do you think? What else?
We didn't talk about Josh Allen, really. I mean, we kind of touched on his day, but there was you asked me about like that first drive and what it looked like. And we've seen times with this Bills offense where, you know, they'll come out hot. I think of the Rams game last year. I think of the first six games where they had trouble in the vaunted third quarter and like the offense would just stall out. There was not only did they come into the third quarter and go right down the field, they had very little trouble, in my opinion, outside of that one fourth down stop, the pass to Devin Singletary that was in the first quarter. They had very little trouble getting in the end zone, scoring kind of at will, kind of as they wanted to. But more so than that, I believe it was after the last interception off of Heinicke, they came out and they put their heel on the neck of the Washington football team. They were like, no, we're not going to let you off the mat. We're going to, and they went right back down the field again. To me, that's the stuff I like to see. And I know that college is different from the pros, and this might be something you can speak to because you played in college and you played in the pros. And there was always that in college, it's like you're not only you're playing the opponent, but you're also playing, the people that are ranking you. So we got to score as many points as we possibly can. Whereas in the NFL, other than Bill Belichick, it always was kind of a gentleman's game, right? So if we're up by two possessions and there's 5 minutes left or 6 minutes left, we're going to run the ball, run the clock out. Obviously, like I said, Belichick for years didn't do that to the Bills. He would put 50 on us every time he could and just destroy us. I don't need to see us put 60 up. We could have put a 50 burger on them yesterday. I don't need to see that, but I did like to see the energy from the offense that, you know what, we're not done. And this game isn't over. So you better bring it because we're going to bring it to you.
Well, I like that too. I think, we're all grown men here. We have this issue at my kids' high school. You know, we destroy teams and then we put our second group in and they still destroy them. And then we get, evil looks from people. Look, it's just a game, right. And I keep going back to that. You you don't want us to beat you by 35 points, then just play better. Stop us. We're not obligated to be concerned about your feelings.
Right.
I thought that Josh played pretty well. I think it was 31 of 41. I thought he had probably two throws that I thought could have been placed a little bit better. And then you say, well, there's a lot of wind, right? And that had an effect. It had an effect on a kickoff. Mm-hmm. So I think by and large, there's really not a lot to be concerned about. What I was happy to see, and I saw Darrell Williams do it yesterday, he had his hands full. I mean, Chase Young is a real football player. And there were many, many occasions. It reminded me when I played for the Bills in the old K-Gun offense, we laughed. We laughed at ourselves in like pity because it was five guys against whatever they brought. That's just right. The way we ran our offense, and nobody felt bad for us except us. We got guys pinning their ears back. And that was the situation that the offensive line was stuck with yesterday. Mm-hmm. Darrell Williams had one-on-one matchups with Chase Young all night long.
Yep.
And, he got you could say he got – if I were he, I'd say, yeah, he beat me on that play, but I recovered enough, and the quarterback did his part of the job, which is to maneuver in the pocket. If you're only getting beaten by one guy and you're not getting beat like that, then it's your job to help me. I need your help. And aside from a couple of plays, it was a great test for our tackles.
Yeah.
I guess, was it Payne that was lined up on Cody Ford? Cody's got some issues. And Brandon Bean or Coach McDermott actually said, we still need to continue, still need to prove on the offensive line. And I think that's true. But this test with so much, four wides, five wides, and solo blocking and drop back was that's a challenge against a group like that. And I think they fared well. And I think it was a little bit of a confidence builder.
Yeah. You were talking to me yesterday just about technique and how technique helps you. And I asked you a question, just so everybody knows, I asked you a question just about, why is there nobody that pulls a player aside and says, hey, don't be afraid of doing this or don't be afraid of doing that, or you are doing this or you're not doing that. And you said it's hard, obviously, from the field level to kind of see what they're doing necessarily, especially if they're out on the opposite side. But break down for a second just some of those challenges that Cody Ford was having, because it is out there today on Twitter that while the offensive line did play well, that Cody Ford didn't fare too well. He had, I think, he let up 12 pressures and 11 of them were to Darren Payne. And there were many times that he was beaten from the word go.
Yeah, well, so the first part of your question, let's unpack that. You know, when I coach football, I get the play in and I run down the sideline because I want to look through the line as much as I can as if I were sitting in the end zone. And that's how offensive linemen watch film. It's all end zone film. And that's how coaches coach film. So wherever their coach is on the sideline, you know, he may not have the vantage point or he may not be focusing. I mean, if I were he, I'd be focusing on Cody Ford right now. Mm-hmm. He's struggling. And there's, you know, he would admit it too. And if he doesn't, that might even be a bigger problem. But, you know, intra-game coaching on technique is a really kind of catch-22 thing to do, right? Because Cody might be inside of his own head right now. Mm. And getting out of your head and having people kind of like on the sideline trying to talk to you about hand placement and steps, you know, it could become a catastrophe. It could be, it just could make it even worse. But there are basics that he needs to go into the film room. And I just hope that, you know, the coach is saying, look, man, you're a guard now and slightly different rules apply. When the guy slides out, you're a little bit more like a tackle, but then tackle rules apply. It seemed like when Payne was lining up really wide on him, he was using almost like a tackle set when somebody's 4 yards outside the ball. And he kept on the snap of the ball, you know, just starting with his shoulders turned. And that's a big, strong guy who's, you know, you can't stop forward momentum. He and his hand placement needs improvement. And I'm sure he'll see that. And, you know, he would agree with me if I told him in person, but if he sees the podcast, he'd be, man, that guy's a dick.
I don't think we're going to say anything necessarily disparaging to Cody Ford. There's, like I said, there's already some stuff out there where they're just, it's just not necessarily flattering some of the stuff that they're saying.
I don't want to flatter him either. I think, you know, the trick is I've played great games and we've lost. And then I've played, like, I hope nobody sees this film. I'm embarrassed for my family, my deceased grandparents, my ancestors, and you win. And if you that's the tougher one, right? You know, the wins kind of salve all wounds. But if you aren't taking it personally every time you're watching film and hyper criticizing your own play down to the minutia, like that should have been a 4-inch step and not an 8-inch step. You know, my right. hand placement. And he just looks tentative with his hand placement. And in fact, the problem with him is it's too much placement, not enough strike.
Right. Break that down. That's good.
Well, I mean, especially on a guy like Payne, who he didn't seem to be two-dimensional, right? I mean, he pressed the upfield shoulder every time. So this is my right shoulder. Mm-hmm. And he would press that shoulder. So you have to get a strike on a guy like that who's coming just one direction. You need to take just the slightest amount of momentum off of him. And there's a difference between me elbow tight, shoving this hand up onto your pads and trying to get to that, you know, kind of, I don't know what angle that is, 60-degree angle extension on your arm, and then making sure you fit your outside hand in the proper place.
Right.
And, you know, that's a strike. But if you're just kind of coming from the outside and you're just kind of playing patty cake, you know, you're not taking anything off of a guy who's huge
right.
and driving forward.
Right.
So I say hand placement as a visual to where it should be placed, but not how it should be placed. You need to strike and have great hand placement.
Gotcha. And he was clearly, I think what I want to ask you is now we're kind of breaking down a player position, which is the fun part for me. What is the deterrent outside of, you know, because I think you'd said to me yesterday, like he looks like he's afraid to get his hands on him because he doesn't want his hands swatted away or moved. Well, if that's what happens, so he does it and the player like is adept at knocking his arms off of him or knocking his hands off him, what's the next move? Is it a matter of getting back faster and then letting him crash into you and bear hugging him? And I'm literally talking like this because I have no idea.
It's like one of those things where, you know, Occam's razor, right? The simplest solution is often the best solution in the absence right. of extenuating variables, I guess.
Right, right.
So Occam's razor says that the most success you have as an offensive lineman is striking the inside shoulder first, that's predominantly the coaching method is inside hand, inside shoulder and strike. And when you get away from that, the risk. Okay. So here's the risk. If you typically, you know, when you're playing offensive line, it's shoulders back, chest up, bowed back, eyes to the sky, pad level beneath the guy in front of you. And you it's kind of weird. Like you want to have this ability to strike, but not tip over. You don't want to lean. So if some guys have a tendency, if they're a little top heavy, they're not good waist or hip or knee benders, they tend to strike and they come forward too quickly. Now, when you miss on that, you know, think Warren Sapp, boom, boom, and the acceleration toward the quarterback from there. So there's that fear of getting beat quick, but that fear takes you out of, you know, the number one technique that prevents those situations. So, okay, so now you strike and you're in good position and you get a swat or a wave, and now your other hand, you know, this hand is off, and then it's a recovery. This other hand comes up from the inside, and then you have to sink. Most people don't, it seems kind of weird. Like, you don't want to go down because then you get tipped over. But when you sink, you know, your feet go back and you try to leverage up again, and kind of this sort of physical motion. It's kind of hard to explain, but you know, you always say, like, your eyes, you know, you can't get head over tea kettle, so to speak, right? You gotta maintain this equilibrium. And I don't think he's there. And you know, people go through slumps. You know, my son pitches and he throws a bad game. And I said, I want to show you something. And I show him the list of Hall of Fame MLB pitchers. And I'm like, every one of these guys got shelled. Mm. Every one of these guys got yanked after, you know, two home runs in a row. All of them. So, and that's my hope. And I mean, I'm not here to criticize Cody. I think if he's self-coaching, he doesn't need my criticism. I can't crawl in his head, and I certainly don't know how he's being coached. But the nice thing, and it seems weird to say this, but, you know, we got the other three guys in at the end of the game. And those reps matter. They matter to them personally, professionally, but it also matters to the team, you know, getting guys in like that. Cody better look out, because, you know, he might end up in a situation where he's rotating.
Right. Did you see the other replay that I sent you of Spencer Long's rep against the same guy, Darren Payne, and when he rolled him?
Was he at the tackle position?
He was. So I don't know what the handoff necessarily was, but he tried that same kind of move where he tilted his body to go around him, and like Spencer Long just got his hands on him and rolled him right over. Like, it was Spencer Brown, my bad. Yeah, just roll. I keep calling him Spencer Long, so I've got Spencer Long stuck in the brain. But yeah, just grabbed him by the shoulder. What's that?
Who's Spencer Long?
Spencer Long used to be. He was a offensive lineman for the Buffalo Bills a couple years ago.
So. Oh, that wasn't one of Howie Long's kids.
I don't think so. He had hair and he was a lot bigger than Or no, Howie Long, football player. I'm thinking Howie Mandel. My bad. Wrong Howie. Wrong Howie.
The show is out of control.
Yeah, we're off the rails a little bit. But if you get a chance to check that rep, it was which I think that's what you're doing right now. It was impressive just to kind of see what he had done to the same guy, to Darren Payne. Now, obviously, from a different position, unless they move Darren Payne out to an end spot just for that one rep. But yeah, Spencer Brown had no trouble with him at all.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
They talked yesterday in the postgame, and this is where I would like to get a little bit of insight as well. They talked in the postgame yesterday to Feliciano and to Deion Dawkins, and they were asking them, well, what was different? And Feliciano was like, nothing. He's like, we just practice. And it's like, like, there was really no information there at all. Like, from the Steelers game to now, we're the same people. And it's just like, something's different, bro. Like, I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I'm looking at that play right now, and it's, you know, it's a running play, and, you know, he just got his hand. It's a beautiful play by him, but what you'll notice if you rewatch it is he actually skated the line pretty nicely, and he stayed parallel along the line, and then when he felt like he had a leverage position, and a lot of guys don't feel this, you know, he had a great right-hand push on that, and, you know, sometimes you just get lucky, and maybe Payne is taking a side. Or he's trying to settle down and he's got a good leverage position. I think, well, I mean, we've all agree that Spencer Brown was a great pick.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm excited to see him kind of, yeah, mature. Other things that went not so well, things that need worked on. I was not happy, as much as there was a lot of, for me, conversation about, oh, complete team win. Like, the special teams yesterday were not great. There was, Isaiah McKenzie had a long return that was called back on a hold, and it was a legit hold. It wasn't a bad call, and we can talk about the refs and how awful they were, too, if we want to talk about things that need work, because you were screaming at the television about holding calls that were not getting called, specifically on Taylor Heineke's touchdown run where 76 had a hold of his guy and then released him late. Obviously the pop-up kickoff that came down, mental error, coaching error, whatever you want to call it, Isaiah's got to sell out. He's got to have that ball touch his body. Even if it hits him and bounces off of him, it's better than the ball bouncing left and a player just picking it up and running it into the end zone. And then obviously, you know, Tyler Bass kicking the ball out off the field, you know, and getting that penalty on the kickoff out of bounds. There's just some work that's got to be done there for me too. There was one other thing too that I can't remember. Isaiah McKenzie, I think, ran in the back of one of his players. It was just a little bit, and it was fine.
I don't grade it a D. I mean, no, I think it's still C plus. You know, that's an anomaly, the ball falling out of the sky like that. Right. And I think it's weird because you're looking at the kick and so much of this matters, right? Like if you thought that they were kicking it high on purpose, then the trajectory of the ball off the tee is going to bring McKenzie up. He's going to react to that.
Right.
But as the ball comes off the tee, it looks to him as if it's a that's a long kick. And then all of a sudden, it's a speed kind of thing because the ball's still hanging. Right. It's just now it's just doing this faster than it's doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't fault him on that one. I mean, I just give that up as like, you know, I mean, just a freak accident, so to speak. He would tell you, my guess is that he said, I have to attack the ball.
Right. Right.
And, you know, you can say, well, you need to be in better body language because you might have been flat footed. And then all of a sudden you realize this and it takes you a half a second to go. And that's all he needed was a half a second.
Yeah.
Tyler Bass kicking the ball out of bounds. If it's high wind, that's a coaching fault, coaching error. Like if the wind is really pushing the ball, you shouldn't be directionally kicking to a corner of the end zone.
Right, right.
You should be saying, you know what, middle of the field to your left or straight middle of the field.
Yeah.
The winds are high. Yeah, kicking the ball out of bounds in this day and age, I mean, nah.
Especially when you can kick it through the uprights from the 35 or wherever they kick it from. I think for me, there's a scar there for me. So if we're going to peel back a layer, I played varsity baseball growing up and I played left field. I played shortstop. I played second base. And when I would play infield, your coach, because basically that was a pop-up, right? It was a pop-up just beyond shortstop, just beyond second base. And when I played shortstop and second base, I was taught and trained and did it in softball too. See the ball, turn and run without looking, and then look back for the ball, right, and catch it this way. And there was one time, and this is the scar, I was playing left field, and that play happened. And I was expecting, I'm not going to name any names because I remember the shortstop's name, I was expecting him to do what I was always taught to do, and I didn't attack it, and I let the ball drop right at my feet, and I was out of the game immediately.
And that kid is still in therapy, right? He's still like replaying that over in his head. He's like, damn.
But I'm the one that got punished.
He bailed me out too. Like it was bad, but Joe Miller could have saved me.
I'm the one that got yanked. He didn't get yanked out of the game. I did. I mean, he was a senior and I was a junior, but I'm the one that got pulled. That's why
preferential treatment. I mean, you're a redhead, and
I'm a redhead. It's true.
You're like redheads. I mean, I don't know.
So I've got a bit of a scar. So that's
look, personal. I'm letting that one go. Look, in my mind, when I was watching the game with you, I was thinking to myself, why do people continually hold on special teams plays, right? And it's like, how can we not eliminate this? How is this something that we can't eradicate from like a functioning return team, whether it's punt or kickoff? Like, I don't think the guys are thinking, I'm going to hold, he's not going to see me, you know, but you just have this propensity when you grab onto something not to let go. And it's all about that timing, right? I mean, you watched it. And it was a hold, but half a second earlier, if you let go. And so why do you hold anyway?
Right.
I don't know. It's crazy to me. I can't tell you. Well, I hate that expression. I use it all the time. There were so many occasions in Buffalo, you know, the offensive line, if you look at the sideline, they all congregate right around the 25 to go up after a return, after a kickoff return, huddle up. And then, you know, the return goes to like the 45 and you're just like, there's a part of you that's so exhilarated, but offensive linemen are all the same. Like when I'm watching a huge play like that, I'm not watching the guy run into the end zone.
You're watching for flags.
I'm looking back and I'm just scanning the field, right? So damn, you're like running out to the 40 and all of a sudden you're like, and I'm making a right turn. I'm going back to the 11 yard line.
That's hysterical. Did you get to play any special teams as a Buffalo Bill?
I covered punts my rookie year.
Yeah, did you cover punts? So the other one to me that's frustrating, I would love to eliminate, are blocks in the back on returns. And it's just, it's always those just very subtle. And I don't know how many of the guys are diving. What they just feel it and they dive. But that's another one too that for me. And it seems like the NFL goes on tears. They won't call it like they haven't really called it yet this year. And then all of a sudden there'll be five a game between both teams for the next five games. It just
speaking of flopping, I got an issue or retraction from our last show. I was contacted by the Cristiano Ronaldo team, and they were very upset about me saying Cristiano Ronaldo flops and plays it up. And they what they did, though, is they sent me a highlight film of Messi and said you should have chosen Messi. So I'm changing over that. No, guys don't feel it and then, like, you know, go all theater on you.
No.
But why do you hold? What's the block in the back, fellas? Just, you know.
If they've gone by you, let them go, right?
I mean, we say that because we can replay the film so slowly, and right. We watch a replay, but what happens like that?
Yeah,
I mean, it's insane how fast the game moves.
There wasn't when I
was a rookie, and you know, I thought the game was just incredibly fast, and we made it to the playoffs, and some of the offensive linemen were like, here we go, it's going to get more intense, and I'm like, how does it get more intense from here? Are you kidding me? Like, it's going to get faster.
We run a no huddle offense. We run a play every 13 seconds, and you're telling me we're gonna go faster than this?
Yeah, I love that, man. Kept practices short. It was miserable though when you're three and out like six times. That's the thing too, is like, yeah, you're hanging your head on the sideline. You know, maybe that was a little bit of Chase Young. He's like, God, we can't even help our offense. Our offense can't help us. I mean, but at least we can make an onside kick.
Yeah. I remember because I was on the opposite side of the television during those years, and I remember the announcers always talking. And it was almost like it seemed like they were waiting for that moment. They were waiting for the Bills to come out in the 90s and go three and out four times in a row so they could say, this is really putting hurting on their defense. They've been on the field for the last quarter and a half. And it's like, just shut up. Just shut up. Like, let it go.
Well, again, you know, I'm hearing a lot of talk about, you know, how, where the teams are separating right now. And I keep saying, look, we're three games in.
It's early.
And I want to revel in this victory. I think last week we beat Miami, who I hate. Mm-hmm. And then beating them convincingly coming off of a disappointing loss and performance by my people up front, who, you know, mean a lot to me. There's so much celebration now. I'm like trying to temper it a little bit, right? I mean, this was literally the division in the NFL last year where a 7-9 team went to the playoffs and won their division.
We just played them.
Yes. And I'm thinking to myself, how happy am I allowed to be? You get that feeling, Joe? Never. Like, it looks beautiful. What was it, 43-21? And you're like, woo, wait. Let's make sure we beat the right people.
That's the hard part. The Bills are holding opposing team quarterbacks right now to 189 yards. And the funny thing is we're back onto what went well, because there wasn't much in this game to talk about that didn't go well. There wasn't much to necessarily quote work on, even though I'm sure there is, and they're going to be going back at it. But yeah, they're holding the Bills defense is holding opposing quarterbacks to 189 yards average. They've had five touchdowns thrown on them, and they've picked off the ball three times, which is pretty incredibly stellar. I don't have the completion percentage numbers, but they're playing lights out. It's unbelievable. And when you play the Steelers and then you play the Dolphins, who are a dumpster fire, not as bad as the Jets, but they're a dumpster fire, right? That offensive line on the Dolphins is really bad. They had a horrible time yesterday against the Raiders as well. And then obviously you get what you get from Washington. You want to be excited, right? I think what I was most excited about yesterday is the continuation of the defense. So I'm just still seeing it from the defense. And then just the return of Josh Allen.
Yeah, and I never really returned to this, but I didn't focus on Matt Milano and Edmonds as much because I was really focusing on that defensive front four. When it became apparent that we weren't going to bring pressure from linebackers or corners off the edge, how were they going to do? You know, we came up with zero sacks. They must not have played well. But if you go back and roll back the intensity on those rushes, you know, aside from a few instances where guys got tossed on a couple of double teams and kind of got stoned in place, the intensity of movement and activity is, as an offensive lineman, that's just exhausting. I love a guy that comes in, has one failed move, and then I just kind of get to hang out until the play's over. But these guys are really continuing to work the hands, you know, and they're attacking different places on the body. You know, you get one guy who all he does, his best move is bull rush. You get bull rush 95% of the time. Great, I can deal with that. But if I'm getting 30% attack on my inside shoulder, you know, and 20% or 10-15% straight up on me, and then the remaining percentage on my edge shoulder, you know, with a dip inside every now and again, I'm just like, oh, this is aggravating.
Yeah, it's a carousel.
And that's what they're doing. And the activity is really high. So, yeah, zero sacks, but also no help. We literally said, you guys are good enough that you will affect the game enough that we will force this kid to scramble and try to make plays. And then we're banking on our linebackers and secondary to play terrific football.
Yeah,
and that doesn't mean they don't get receptions, but it was nice when they dropped it. I was very impressed with that.
For sure. So all in all, this football game was, how do you temper your excitement, right? So how do you not get super overboard excitement, but how do you also temper your expectations? Because now we're going to the Texans coming into the stadium this weekend, and it is Davis Mills, by the way, not David Stills. I apologize.
Stills was in the band, right? Stills, Nash, and Young.
Stills, Nash, and Young. Yes. Looking,
I'd like to play him at quarterback.
looking forward to this football game. 17-point favorites out of the gate, and I know that doesn't necessarily mean anything. I mean, they still got to line up and play. That's why, you know, they play the games and any given Sunday and all that good stuff. And you hope to God it isn't a quote unquote trap game. I don't know. We've never talked about that. If you believe in trap games, because who's next?
We've been trap doors, but not quicksand.
But you said something interesting yesterday, and when you think about it, it kind of aligns with the idea of a trap game. Who's week five? Do you know?
No.
I believe it's Kansas City.
That's correct.
And
what you're saying is, are we looking past?
Yes. Are we heavily focused on what's going to happen in week five? So much so it's like, well, it's just the Texans and they're awful.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm afraid of awful teams.
Right.
The Pittsburgh is proving to be an awful team, and we lost to them. We figured out a way to lose. That's why. When the game plan works in the first quarter, you set yourself up for success. Teams that are bad, if you give them any life, then the momentum and the confidence starts to build over there, and they realize, hey, we're just not a great team right now, but we're not this awful, and they keep a flame of hope alive. So I mean, individually, how do you have to tackle that as a person? And you can't speak for everybody. And sometimes bad teams play great, and sometimes great teams play bad. So trap game, I don't like thinking about it that way, because people, you hear it all the time. Oh, they were looking at the upcoming game against the Chiefs. Well, no, they weren't. I mean, you're not exposed to it. I mean, the only way to, if you go in there in your head, there's a part of you that's like, oh, you know, I'm not concerned about Houston. I'm really only concerned about the Chiefs. That's no one ever said that in the locker room.
True.
So very true. I don't know. There's still enough to work on. The offensive line, the running game still needs work. Mm. And I think we're fortunate that we have leadership in the locker room, and we have leadership at the coaching level that kind of could, you know, you do have to maintain player focus a little bit too. Mm. You know, you give them a wide berth, but you also have to be sensitive, and you got to, you know, draw that focus in. Mm-hmm. And this might be, they might think that, and nobody ever wants to be lose and then be accused of it. So my guess is they will have a heightened awareness of, we're here right now. Be here now.
Mm-hmm. It's very good. I'm excited for this football game. I'm excited for all of them. This one, to me, the opportunity to go 3-1, beaming with confidence into that Chiefs game. So am I already looking past it? Probably. Beaming with confidence and really getting things righted, more improvement from the run game. And we didn't even talk about Zach Moss. And Zach Moss he's at the point now where he came in as a rookie last year. They were interviewing him, and, you know, I like to make tacklers make business decisions, and we didn't see people make a lot of business decisions last year when tackling him. He kind of got tackled a lot, and this year he's punishing people as a runner, and he played well yesterday, and we haven't even talked about it. So to see that train continue to move and kind of develop, I want to see Josh Young come out for what amounts to potentially be another preseason game and really continue staying sharp, and then just put it all on the line for Kansas City. I don't know what's going on with Kansas City. I don't know if you caught up on, watched any of those highlights or watched that game at all. They had four turnovers. He threw three or four interceptions. I think he had two interceptions and two fumbles, but yeah, they turned the ball over a lot.
I think, teams tend to figure people out. And I was kind of rolling over our last week in my head a little bit about what we saw from the 2020 offense as opposed to the 19 offense and how we're not seeing this play or that play. And I think it might be a little bit of evolve before you get found kind of thing.
Right.
So there might be some of that going on. I continue to say that the running game, whereas it always doesn't always look beautiful and it doesn't look productive, when we needed it, it was good. We have two running backs now that are kind of rolling in and out. Mm-hmm. You talk about Moss. Well, he was a rookie last year, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
My memory escapes me. And if you don't see vast improvement from a rookie draft pick from year one to the next, they don't. Other than the first round, the expectation is guys have to develop a little bit. Otherwise, they would have been drafted in the first round. So there's an understanding of how quick the game is, how physical the game is, who you can physical and who you cannot. Mm-hmm. And some of the moves that you used at Utah will not work in the NFL.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that you can't grow as a player and adapt accordingly. And he seems to be doing that. I love the 1-2 punch. I do. I think I think Singletary was good yesterday, minus one bad read that he had. And again, it's funny because they always talk about offensive line. This is another thing that kind of they always talk about, the offensive line didn't open up the holes. Well, sometimes you're not looking for where the actual hole was. I mean, you have to understand philosophy of play too. But a number of people, because they don't understand it, and it's kind of hard to grasp, running backs should have keys too on various types of plays based on alignment. So Thurman Thomas, when the play side defensive tackle was in a three technique, he knew that play would always bend behind the center and guard, left guard. Right. But if the play side guy happened to be in a one technique, chances are that thing would hit play side. So, understanding alignment, defensive movement, and things of that nature based on the play and its philosophy of where it hits, that's really hard to get. And add in that the game is going at a million miles an hour.
Right. Let's do this. So we're going to wrap this thing up here in a second. I know that you want to talk about a specific play that you feel everybody calls a pin and pull, but it's not. It's actually a zone play. However, I feel like we're going to have a little more time and ability next week to talk about it. So maybe we can break that down and kind of bring some education to what people are seeing next week on that play, because it's just, I think next week is going to potentially be another one of these types of weeks where we got a lot of good to talk about, maybe not a lot of bad to talk about, and we can probably get into just some of that play stuff for next week as far as that goes. But any final thoughts, closing thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we were going to do chalk talk yesterday, and we forgot to do that. But
we're
going to basically look at this defensive alignment with two different types of plays, and talk about pin and pull versus zone variation. I'm excited for that. I really think that you're going to have a blue-collar, workaday attitude this week. It'll be closer than I think most people think. It's not going to be 17. I think it's going to be 10 or 13.
Nice.
Wow. Men have pride, and right now Houston's like rebuilding their pride. And
well, they can't be happy about seeing 17 either, right?
No, they can't. But yeah. I just think that, minus a few teams historically, people rebound a little bit. And yeah, I think they want their jobs. And when things are going poorly, you're not just fighting for your team and for victories. You're fighting for your own job.
Right.
Because when things are really bad, you're getting exposed in ways that kind of aren't even fair to you.
Mm-hmm.
You're being put in positions which are unwinnable situations. And eventually guys are just like, enough's enough. And they all tend to respond at the same time.
Gotcha. It makes sense.
Yeah, I'm extremely excited to watch the next game. I mean, I'm I'm more optimistic this year than I was last.
It's crazy.
I think Josh is looking great. The number one thing that has me over the moon is the defense.
Right. That defense play. Oh my gosh. Yep. Yeah. My people can flights for a parade here in Buffalo, their boss. So that was actually really good.
I totally want to be the grandmaster of the parade. Like, you know, the guy, but the one from Animal House to lead everybody down the,
you've got the personality for it.
Lead him off Pearl Street into a dead end.
You've got my, when the band just like crashes into the wall and keeps crashing into the wall. You've got my vote. Like, I absolutely. Yeah.
Final thoughts. Bills win. Continue to look for them to play, to game plan appropriately for their opponent.
Yeah.
Everybody's supposed to do, but executing on that game plan. And I'm predicting 3.5 sacks by the defense.
Nice.
One interception. Josh throws for two, but we run for three.
Nice. A little flip of the script. More consistency and more building of that run game. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been tuned into watching live or listening to in podcast form, the Off Tackle with John Fina show. I'm your host, Joe Miller, with, as always, John Fina, the star of the show here on Buffalo Rumblings. But we're so excited that you guys join us and tune in. Again, tune in next week. We're going to do some chalk talk next week with John. Talk about some plays that you guys see all the time that maybe you're not necessarily seeing the way that it needs to be seen. I'm trying to bait but not give it away, if that makes any sense. But next week, join us at 9 o'clock. Every single week, join us at 9 o'clock. But with that, my name is Joe Miller. That's John Fina. Go Bills.
Go Bills.